Here with me now on Real News is my colleague Ellen Peters, who is the director of the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication Center for Science Communication Research. And where else, Ellen, but in a center like yours, can we begin to perhaps understand, for the purpose of what is real news, how can we understand the psychology of decision-making and human judgment in the context of rejection of science? How do we convince people who are rejecting this news about science and saying things like, I'm not going to get a vaccine against COVID?
Yeah, so this is, of course, one of the pressing scientific issues of our time. From a psychology perspective, this has to do, this is about belief persistence. When we believe, we start to believe in something, and then once we believe in it, just as a species, these beliefs that we hold tend to be surprisingly persistent. That's just kind of how we're made. And what ends up being problematic sometimes is our beliefs persist because we're often closed to challenges to those beliefs. And so in this case, what we seem to have is a belief, it could be a general anti-vaccine belief, but in this case, there's an awful lot more people who seem to be not wanting to get this vaccine compared to the relatively small anti-vax population that exists out there when it comes to other vaccines. And so it seems to come down to politics, unfortunately. And
but if
President
we separate
Trump,
out the politics, mm-hmm. we do find a cohort of these people who are choosing not to get the vaccine, who at least cite what they think is medicine and what they think is science, saying things like, this vaccine was developed so fast, it's only an emergency authorization from the FDA. There are people getting sick from side effects. These kinds of things, which obviously could be politically driven, but they also are at least presented as an argument with a sheen of science. How is that combated when it isn't based on what at least the two of us would be considering real news?
Well, some of that, Peter, is real news. It is an emergency use authorization. It was developed very quickly. People are experiencing some side effects. For example, when I got my second shot, I was in bed for a day. And so some of this actually is happening. So there, to some extent, that is also part of real science. And
yes,
I think that
when I say that, real news, though, I mean it in terms of contextualizing it for both the advantage of the individual and then the communal value of not having people spreading the virus.
Yeah, and that's what it gets down to. So let's talk first about stuff that doesn't tend to work in these kinds of situations. Trying to just tell them that they're wrong doesn't work. It makes no difference. Tell people you got misinformation and it was just incorrect, and you try to retract the information, you try to enhance the clarity of the retraction. None of this seems to work in these kinds of cases. If they get misinformation, present the retraction right after, again, doesn't seem to work. What seems to work are things like, if you can, in this case, it's not going to be easy, but to do pre-exposure warnings. So before they get exposed to bad information about vaccines, have a pre-exposure saying you're about to get false information, essentially. And so that could work maybe in small ways down the road as we learn more about the vaccines or new misinformation comes out about the vaccines. That's probably going to be pretty small. Repetition does work. So telling people once that they're wrong doesn't make a difference, but you can repeat that, and that does have a little bit bigger of an effect. Again, it's not great. The things that seem to work better is when you can tell an alternative story that's coherent to them, that you can tell an alternative story that makes sense to them within their own worldview or within something that they value. And so,
for example,
Yeah. So in this case, one of the things you might try to do, and we're seeing this start to come out of some of the states, is in the state of, and I think I saw it for the state of New Jersey, if I'm remembering correctly, in the state of Missouri, over this recent time period, the only people who died of COVID in hospitals were people who were unvaccinated. No vaccinated people died in the hospital during this time period. These are things that people care about. And so those kind of messages might end up helping. We don't know for sure yet, but they might.
So in the context of communicating science research, and that's certainly what we're talking about here and what your center is about, the center that you direct, how do those who are trying to communicate that get to a population that is exposing itself, that is self-selecting what it wants to choose for getting news? How does one penetrate a society that's not just divided politically, but also is divided often regarding news sources?
You know, that takes a lot more work trying to understand what the source of their information is. And so something very similar actually happened in the country of Israel. In Israel, there are people who were very religious, who are not getting vaccinated. And what they ended up doing is they went to where people like that got their news. And it turned out that they got a lot of their news from their religious leaders. So they went and they spent a lot of time talking to the religious leaders there, trying to get them onto their side. They also found out that where people got a lot of their news, and I have to admit, I didn't fully understand this, but they somehow are getting a lot of news from these posters that are put up on walls. And so they started putting information there themselves as well. So they had information that they found out who the trusted sources were. They found out where the trusted places where people go normally to get information. And they use those same kind of avenues in order to try to get the best information.
Finding a parallel outlet so that the audience is already familiar with the medium and is in a place where that medium would at least be available.
Familiar with and trusting of. The trust is a big, big factor here, because when you're trying to persuade someone, trusted sources are much more persuasive than non-trusted sources, as you might imagine.
So let's talk about something that is broader in the sense of communication research, perhaps, but with examples. Where are some of the successes where misinformation, disinformation, propaganda has been successfully countered by what we're calling for this series, real news?
Yeah, so I think the Israeli example is actually a very good one. Israel has one of the highest proportion of vaccinated people in the world. So I think that actually is a very good one. You know, I would honestly, I can't come up with another example right offhand.
That means you've got a lot of work to do at the center in order to come up with these scenarios that need help. But what are the formulae for creating communication that resonates with a populace that's does not necessarily have expertise, but has a desire to consume the information and differentiate fact from fiction?
Yeah, so you start with the trusted sources. You start with meeting them where they are. And by that, it's, you know, communicating to them down avenues that they're accustomed to, like with the Israeli example. There is, you want to provide them with the information. Providing people with data is actually very helpful. Provide like in prescription drugs, for example, if you provide numeric data about side effects, people actually trust the data better. They're much more accurate when it comes to the risks. They understand them better, and they're also more willing to follow a doctor's prescription for medications. And it's all about providing the data. So providing the data can be quite important. You also, though, have to provide information, whether it's numeric data or other kinds of data. You have to provide it in ways that are clear, that it might be a data visualization. It might be it might actually not be showing them all the data, picking out only the most important pieces, because people can get overwhelmed by too much information fairly easily. So it might be about picking out the most important pieces. And the most important pieces are going to be things that are relevant to them. And what that means is you have to go out and find out about that particular audience. So you sort of introduce this discussion that there are people out there who aren't taking the vaccine, and you talked about it as if they're this monolithic block. There's actually lots of different types of people for different reasons who are not getting the vaccine. Some people, it probably is a political issue. Other people, it's trust in the medical system. Other people, it does have to do with they don't trust this particular vaccine because it is new. It was developed quickly. So there's a whole, and there are others as well. There's a whole variety of, we have a very large country, and there's a whole variety of different people who are not getting vaccinated for different reasons. There is also, by the way, probably a very big proportion of people who just haven't gotten around to it. They're busy. So some people are very busy. They've got three jobs. It's really hard for them to get a vaccine. You've got to go to them. And so that's part of what President Biden has just started talking about recently, is bringing the vaccine to people, because there's going to be an awful lot of them where you just need to make it more convenient. Some people are like a little hesitant maybe, but they'd probably be fine with getting it if you made it easy. And so you get all these different types of people, and you have to, if we really need to get this large portion of the population vaccinated, as we think we do, we need to find out more about those who aren't getting vaccinated and meet them where they are for whatever reason.
And what do you do with those who buy into things that are so far-fetched, it's hard for many of us to imagine how they can be embraced? The Bill Gates microchip into the arm, which perhaps is easy to laugh at until one realizes that there are believers in our midst. How does one communicate across that chasm?
Yeah, so that's one, that particular chasm, this may not be a popular opinion, I'm not sure we can cross that particular chasm. I think we need to be, when it comes to vaccination, for example, I think we need to target whatever the lowest lying fruit is. You know, you and I were probably the first. We would have been low lying fruit when it came to vaccines. And those people are not going to be low lying fruit. It's going to be extremely difficult to get them to vaccinate. Their belief persistence, because it's buttressed by their worldviews, it's buttressed by their experiences, it's buttressed by people they trust, like former President Trump, they're going to be very, very difficult to shift, in my opinion. And there aren't a lot of examples that I know of where the type who truly believe in that have been able to be shifted. Now, that all said, probably some people who espouse that belief, maybe they're a little less certain of it. And in that case, one of the things that's been shown in some of the recent literature on misinformation is to get people to stop and pause and think a little harder. And then they start to realize maybe that's not true. And so there are going to be some of that group who maybe aren't as fixed in that belief as some other people are. And we may be able to shift them, maybe.
And so, Ellen Peters, in your role as director of the Center for Science Communication Research, broadly, because this is a generalization, but sometimes generalizations serve us, do you find that people outside the academy want to understand science, or is it that's so complicated, and so your job regarding the general public is overwhelming?
I think people absolutely want to understand science. Science is part and parcel of our everyday lives. It's the medicines we take. It's the clean water we drink. I guess I could answer it both ways. I could say, people just want the clean water. They just want the medication that works. But we also know that people go fairly quickly to not quite trusting. Well, maybe there are metals in that water. Maybe the side effects from that medication are worse than the benefits that it provides. And especially in those kind of cases, talking about the science, helping people to understand the science and the uncertainties of science can actually help them better understand the broader picture and how it fits into their lives. And so I think people want to understand science.
And how do you help them find the sources that are credible versus the sources that are self-serving propaganda?
Yeah, great question. So this is not something we've done work on in the center just yet, but the you know, the kind of things that you, that there's been some really nice work done, like at the University of Pennsylvania with Kathleen Hall Jamieson. And one of the things that she's a big, that she's been a big proponent of is the idea that we as academics need to be talking more to journalists about credible, about the importance of credible sources, and then even starting kind of like a US FDA approved labeling of credible sources versus, you know, how credible is this source? How credible is this particular article of science, you know, this particular article presenting some science even, and coming up with those kind of credibility ratings based on what we know makes good science.
Kind of so like the Good Housekeeping magazine seal of approval. From the kind old of like housewife days.
Absolutely. And so you can have that Good Housekeeping seal of approval on science, or you can teach journalists and others, just the general public, what is it that makes good science? And, you know, and it's things like having a meta-analysis. You know, a meta-analysis is something where that it's a statistical analysis technique that takes in a whole series of studies that have been done on the same topic, and then churns through those data to say, okay, is this a replicable result? Is this a large, is this a result that's found often over and over and over? And so in, so if some finding has had a meta-analysis done on it and it came out as yes, that that looks like it worked in these studies, that's something that's more credible. And there are other sort of signals of that too. Studies that have larger sample sizes, having a sample size of 1,000 is way better than having a sample size of 5. There are all these different, even if you don't have that Good Housekeeping seal of approval yet for science, teaching journalists and other people just what are some of these credible markers of good science.
Your work is cut out for you, Ellen Peters, at the Center for Science Communication Research here at the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication. Thank you, colleague, for joining us here on Real News.
Peter, it's been a pleasure. Nice to see you.
You've been listening to Real News. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. Join us again for more on Real News.